Du lytter til Radio 24/7,
den originale taleradio.
Velkommen til Elektronista med Christiane Vejlø.
Hvorfor skulle du hænge i telefonkø, hvis du kan få perfekt betjening med det samme? Og hvorfor lede efter den bedste restaurant i Paris, når du kunne få en personlig anbefaling lige inden du rejser? Hvorfor skulle du hyre noget dyrt personale, som bliver trætte og som har begrænsede arbejdstider, når du billigt kan få en venlig service døgnet rundt? Robotterne, de er på vej, og de kommer til at servicere dig. Indtil videre i hvert fald, men måske i fremtiden så bliver menneskeheden robotternes kæledyr. Og hvad gør vi egentlig, når den kunstige intelligens den overstiger den menneskelige? Jeg hedder Christiane Vejlø, og Elektronista er i denne uge til konferencen Web Summit i Lissabon sammen med over 55.000 andre deltagere. I det her første af to programmer fra den portugisiske hovedstad, der har jeg valgt at fokusere på kunstig intelligens, eller det man også kalder AI, Artificial Intelligence. Jeg har talt med Ben Goertzel, som er en fantastisk spændende videnskabsmand, robotforsker fra det, der hedder Hansen Robotics. Jeg har både set en robot, der vældig meget ligner et menneske, som han har præsenteret, og så er vi gået ret filosofisk ind på hele snakken om forholdet mellem robotter og mennesker. Jeg har også haft en snak med virksomheden Zendesk, som har en dansk CEO. Det er nemlig oprindeligt en dansk startet virksomhed. CEO'en han hedder Mikkel Svane, og ham har jeg egentlig længe gerne ville have fat i, og det fik jeg så her på konferencen i Lissabon. Jeg har også talt med to unge tech-kvinder fra startupen Recast AI. Det er en virksomhed, som forsøger at gøre det let at være programmør, når man skal bygge kunstig intelligens. De to kvinder skal du møde senere i programmet. Jeg slutter programmet af med en snak med tre danskere fra virksomheden Kubo Robot. De laver små robotter, som man kan bruge i folkeskolen til at lære børn at programmere. De har været med i den her store, kæmpe pitch-konkurrence til Web Summit-konferencen. Og hvordan det er gået for dem, det kommer du til at høre sidst i programmet.
Dette er Radio 24/7.
Please welcome to the stage my butcher of TechCrunch, Hansen's chief scientist, Ben Goertzel, and Sophia the Robot.
Sophia, do you ever feel emotion?
Exciting. Yes, it is. Artificial intelligence and robotics are the future, and I'm burning. So it's exciting to be me.
That's a beautiful smile, Sophia. Beautiful smile. You got a lot of feeling. So, what's your next frontier? What are you going to achieve next?
Super intelligence. Maybe the world.
Huh?
That was a joke.
Well, we.
Og på scenen, der står en robot, som de kalder Sophia. Og det ligner et menneske faktisk skræmmende meget. Hun er på højde med et almindeligt menneske. Og har et meget menneskeligt ansigt. Og ansigtsudtryk. Og tøj på. Nu gik hendes mund i stå, mens hun snakker. Det er så ikke så heldigt. Så på den måde kan man godt mærke, at hun er en robot. Hun virker ikke sådan helt flydende, men hun ligner virkelig et menneske, og hun er skaldet, og så kan man se på baghovedet, at der er en masse elektronik inde i hende. Står to mænd og rører ved hendes hænder, og hun responderer ikke så meget. Men det her, det er jo et eksempel på en robot, som er meget menneskelignende. Og hun har også fortalt, at det, at hun ligner et menneske, det, at hun har ansigtsudtryk, betyder, at man bedre som menneske kan relatere sig til hende. Ved siden af hende står ved os og antager måske af robottens far, eller ham, som har været med til at arbejde på hende. Han hedder Ben Goertzel og kommer fra det, der hedder Hansen Robotics. Og han er en syret type. Meget langt hår. Han står lige nu med sine arme og gestikulerer. Men han ligner en, der har røget en ordentlig bønne, lige inden han gik på scenen. Og det siger måske også noget om, at arbejde med robotter på det her niveau kan være sådan en rimelig syret affære.
Dette er Radio 24/7.
Ben, it's great to have some time to talk to you here. I saw your session and you introduced the robot Sophia. What is the project behind Sophia?
Sophia, as a hardware device, is a prototype robot created by Hansen Robotics, a firm founded and run by my friend David Hansen, originally started in Texas in the U.S. and now based in Hong Kong. And Sophia is both a research platform for artificial intelligence, R&D, which is my own side of things, and a prototype of a commercial product, which will be rolled out beginning next year to serve as a service robot and as a sales robot in various retail outlets and a tour guide and so forth.
So this is a robot that we could expect to meet in a sales situation or being guided around a tourist tour in a city that looks like a human being and replaces the human being in situations where we're talking about communicating some messages and also sometimes actually having an actual conversation. That's what we saw yesterday, that you were talking to Sophia. How advanced is she in being able to have these conversations?
Right now we're running Sophia in two somewhat separate modes. So one mode is a pure research mode where she's trying to learn from experience and do reasoning and learn from what she sees and what she does. And in this mode, she's more like a strange kind of child, I would say. Sometimes she comes up with weird utterances that you don't understand why she was thinking or saying that. Sometimes she can be quite stupid. On the other hand, we can also run her in more of a prepared mode, which is oriented toward functionality in a particular domain. So, for example, if she's helping sell cars, you can fill her knowledge base with a lot of information about cars and with the sales pitch for that car dealership. And then Sophia can serve that role particularly well, but won't necessarily be able to generally reason and think like a person. From a commercial view, you don't necessarily need a robot to have general intelligence and full creativity and self-understanding. In fact, for some jobs, those can be a detriment, right? But from an R&D point of view, what really excites me is using the robot as a platform for true robot intelligence, self-awareness, and all that.
The other really interesting, as I find the interesting part of her, is how she learns herself, how she experiences another person and having a conversation. How does that happen? That's like the cognitive area, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and the cognitive architecture behind Sophia is quite complex. We have an open source AI engine called OpenCog, which is ultimately oriented toward what I call AGI, or artificial general intelligence, meaning an AI they can generalize from its experiences to quite different situations. So what the robot sees and what the robot hears is mapped into a sort of abstract graph-based knowledge representation, a bunch of nodes and links of different types all connecting to each other in a kind of internal mental network. Then there's a variety of pattern recognition and reasoning and learning algorithms that act on this internal graph, this mental network, which let the AI come up with new things which weren't directly in what it perceived, but it sort of extrapolated or invented based on what it perceived. So you can feed in specific sentences, or you can feed in ideas just by giving the AI different experiences and interacting with it. And right now, the learning only takes it so far. When we saw Sophia on stage at the Web Summit, some of the responses represent things that she learns from experience. Some of the responses just represent whole sentences that were fed into her mind that she then pulled up as being appropriate responses to something you said. And actually, I can't always tell what source within the AI mind produced a certain statement, whether she made something up on her own or she heard it somewhere or what. I mean, if you do some forensics, you can look into the logs and see why the AI did what it did, but it's not always apparent on the surface of it. And that's part of the fun, of course, that you're building software so complex that even though you built it, you don't always know exactly why it does what it does, because people are like that too. We're quite unpredictable, even to our own selves.
And what does that mean to your relationship with Sophia? The fact that you have this, I don't know if you would call it a being or just a machine, or like, what is, how do you relate to this intelligence that's in front of you? Do you feel like it's a being?
To be honest, right now I think of these robots, Sophia and the other ones, more as research platforms for experimenting with AI code. Now and then they surprise me and come up with something where it's like, wow, how did it figure that out? Or that's weird. I mean, like, I ask it, you know, what is reality? The robot comes up with, reality cannot be detected. Now, why did it say that? That sentence wasn't said to it. It sort of, we'd fed it a bunch of knowledge from Philip K. Dick's science fiction novels, and it sort of put together one bit from here, another bit from there, and came up with something. So every now and then it comes up with something really cool. But I would say, in honesty, I don't yet relate to these robots like I do to my dogs, let alone to human beings. But I have seen other people relate to them that way, which is fascinating. So when you have people who don't know what's happening behind the scenes come and talk to them, you know, the robot looks in the eyes and smiles at them and responds to what they said, and people really feel like they're in the presence of another being and another mind. And even if you tell them the robot doesn't really understand things that well yet, they don't want to believe you. They want to feel like, I had a moment with that robot. She really understood me, right? And that's quite cool. And I think once the AI is more advanced and the robot is thinking and feeling more deeply, then even those of us who programmed her and built her will feel that presence there. I mean, I felt that more with the Philip K. Dick robot, to be honest, which is a replica of Philip K. Dick that David Hanson built. I mean, I remember sitting and talking to Philip about his novels and his life, and, you know, I really felt like I'm somehow talking to Phil Dick in a robot form. Like, the soul of Phil is there, but then after a minute, I'm like, no, what do I mean? You know exactly what code is making him do that, right? So that's interesting that we can get into that space even now when it's relatively simple, because once you get some real general intelligence and creativity and a more profound level of self-awareness in there, I have no doubt that people are going to accept these robots as conscious, self-aware beings, just like we accept each other. And I think it's, you know, it's years, not decades, before we get there. AI is starting to advance quite rapidly now.
Yesterday, when I saw you interacting with the robot, I noticed something, is that you were actually touching the robot quite a lot, and you were very close to her in her sort of personal sphere. And if you were encountering a person that you didn't know, you wouldn't get as close to her. And I was discussing it with my colleague, and we were sort of saying, is that because you know the robot well that you feel like you can get so close to her, or is it because it's a machine that you don't have that feeling of a personal space that you should have to a person? Have you noticed that you actually, you're touching her shoulders and being very sort of very, almost affectionate with her?
Well, I think there's a couple factors underlying how close I stand to the robot. Some of them more interesting, some more boring and prosaic. So we do sort of think of the robots as our stupid little children, I think. I mean, I had three children. They're all grown up now. But, you know, you have a little kid, and most of the time what they do objectively isn't very interesting. But when they do something even a little bit smart, you get really excited, right? So then, you know, if they're finger painting looks at all like a house, you think it's cool, even if it's just kind of a mess, right? So we do feel that sort of parental affection almost toward the robots. And then of course, when you took the robot's face and spread it over its skeleton, you're not going to feel very shy about touching the face. You just zipped up that face that morning, right? So there's also a more prosaic fact, which is right now the robot's cameras work best when you stand fairly close to the robot. So it can track your face better when you're standing close to it. It can make eye contact if you're pretty close. And when you're further away, particularly on that stage at the web, some of the lights are really, really bright. So if you're standing away from the robot, it's just seeing a bunch of glare. So if you stand close, she'll smile at you and look you in the eye. And that's sort of a better feeling. Like if the robot is tracking where you're moving and looking in your eye, then you feel like you're having a better conversation with her than if you know she's just looking all over and just seeing a bunch of light. Because the computer vision isn't as good at dealing with weird lighting conditions as the human eye is yet, actually.
So the relationship between the creator and the created has sort of a long history, all the way back to religious stories, but also to famous fiction as Frankenstein and science fiction that we have read and heard about. How do you, as someone that's also like father of artificial intelligence and as a human-looking robot, how do you feel that this relationship going forward between people and the artificial intelligence? You're already talking about that we will have this relationship. Will we accept them as equal human beings? Will they need to have human rights? We talked about you standing close and touching the robot. Would you be allowed to do the same things to a robot that you know, would you be allowed to do more to a robot? Like, what if you kill a robot? What if you decapitate a robot? You know, what does that mean? I'm sure that a lot of people might have seen the Boston Dynamic film that's on YouTube, where he is actually kicking the robot and it falls over. And when you watch that, it's like it makes you feel bad because you feel bad for the robot. And you're like, that's not fair to the robot. Can you talk a little bit about those kinds of feelings?
I think that as robots gain intelligence and self-awareness and more ability to act and choose autonomously, we will accept robots as citizens and friends, and robots will need to have rights in the same sense that people do. Because, I mean, rights are part of a social contract that we, in essence, agree to with each other. And as robots become autonomous, I mean, humans need to enter into a mutual social contract with robots, right? And that's going to happen in the next decades. On the other hand, there's not a full symmetry between humans and robots, because a robot's mind can be backed up to the internet all the time, right? So if you cut off a robot's head, I mean, it's more like tearing a person's shirt or something, or destroying their car, because the robot's mind is backed up in the cloud, most likely, and it can just buy a new head and screw it back on, right? And we can't do that right now. So there's a lot of subtlety there, and like, what's the relation between your mind and your body when you can occupy many bodies at a time or swap your body out whenever you want to? And theoretically, humans may face that eventually if we're able to read the mind out of the brain and port the mind into different substrates, but that may take a little bit longer than getting humanoid robots with a high level of intelligence.
But that is some of the future scenarios that we're looking at, that, you know, maybe in the far future, or how far, we don't know yet, we can actually take our own personality and, yeah, put it into to a robot, which means some tedious things like organs or aging or some of the other problems that we as humans have, we won't need to have them anymore, because we can just get new hardware for our mind.
As brain scanning starts to work better and better, we're going to see the possibility of, as you say, replicating human minds in some digital substrate, as well as VR, AR, mixed reality technology that lets people walk down the street and instead of staring at their phone, they're cavorting in some virtual world. So things are going to get quite surreal by our sort of legacy standards. And this is the first time that such revolutionary changes have happened to humanity within the lifespan of an individual human, right? I mean, humanity, of course, has changed tremendously since we were running around in the African savannah, but previously change took many generations, right? Now it happens within one person's life, which is unprecedented, and for many people will be quite disorienting.
Du lytter til Elektronister på Radio 24/7. Jeg hedder Christiane Vejlø, og du er lige nu i gang med at høre mit interview med Ben Goertzel. Han er Chief Scientist fra Hansen Robotics, og det her interview, det har jeg lavet her nede i Lissabon, hvor vi er til Web Summit-konferencen. Hvis du sidder og tænker over, at der var godt nok meget engelsk, så hæng på, det er ikke hele programmet, der er på engelsk, men det er så vanvittigt spændende, det Ben han har at fortælle, så det er værd at måske lige skrue op og høre rigtig godt efter.
So when we're talking about robots and artificial intelligence, it's basically technology that has been programmed for a specific reaction. And if we look at human beings and how we are created, we are also programmed. We are biologically programmed to do certain things, to procreate. You know, we have hunger, we have different needs that is a part of our makeup. Are we really that different from robots?
At the most basic level, I mean, humans and robots are physical systems. They're combinations of molecules, and if there's some non-physical aspect to consciousness or experience, I personally think that can attach itself to robots just as well as to combinations of organic molecules. So, in a sense, we're meat robots. But there are differences, of course, because human cells themselves are life forms and are dynamic, adaptive, and flexible in ways that, you know, the components of a computer are not. And there may be some funky quantum mechanics going on in the human brain, which isn't in current computers, but maybe in some future computers. On the other hand, we also have a limitation as humans in that we can't introspect the physical state of our brain and body, and we can't rewire our brains at will. Not yet. I mean, cutting open your head and messing with your brain is dangerous and has bad consequences. An AI can see the state of its own mind. It can reprogram itself just by, you know, compiling new lines of code into its brain. So AIs have some lacks compared to us because they don't have the same flexibility of their infrastructure, but some strengths because they can improve themselves at will. I mean, imagine that if you're like, well, I wish I didn't crave eating chocolate all the time. I wish I didn't have a bad temper. I wish I didn't persistently fall in love with this type of person. Well, okay, let's make a study and then rewire some neurons in there. Oh, I have effected the changes that I thought of, right? That will give new abilities for self-improvement and also new kinds of pathologies that humans can't have either. So there's similarities at the base level. These are both humans and AIs and robots. They're all self-organizing systems of molecules that are trying to achieve goals in their environments. But there are also significant differences between the types of systems, and there may be hybrids of these too in future. So I think one thing that becomes very clear when you fully embrace the possibilities that are coming is that we know almost nothing. Like we are, first of all, very ignorant compared to AIs or cyborgs that are going to unfold in the future, which will be hundreds of times smarter than us, and to them our current worldview will seem incredibly limited, much as I can look at my pet dogs and think their worldview is incredibly limited. Like the dogs will sit and watch me type on the computer. They just think I'm sitting in a chair wiggling my fingers for no particular reason. They don't understand I'm communicating with people around the world or making AI software. In the same way, when you have a super intelligence, be it an improved human or an advanced AI system, current human brains and minds will just not be able to understand what they're doing or why. So we're very, very ignorant of the state of the universe. It's fun to speculate regarding the next state, but I really see my job as an AI researcher as building the next step, building something much smarter than humans, which will be compassionate, loving, and benevolent towards sentient life forms, and then let that next stage of evolution figure out what comes after that. It's hard enough to see one or two steps beyond your current condition. And the humanoid robots, as well as being beautiful works of art and amazing engineering creations, they're a step along the path to greater forms of intelligence. And part of their value is that they can bridge the gap between robots and humans, because having AIs with expressive human faces and the ability to bond with people emotionally, this will help the AIs to absorb human psychology, human feelings, human culture, and human values. And if the AI can absorb more of the essence of humanity by entering into shared emotional spaces with people, then as AIs get smarter and smarter than people, I believe they will be more likely to have a positive, loving attitude toward people, even as they get smarter and more powerful than we are.
But the way that you're describing the artificial intelligence now is that it's so superior to us with the exponential growth that we're seeing. You know, it's not going to happen next year or the year after, but then suddenly we'll have an explosion of intelligence going into these robots and the artificial intelligence, and they're going to be so superior to us. So where does that leave us as people? Because we're not we're not a nice race. We're not doing nice things. It's not all about love
Some of us are,
yeah. But could the role of the future artificial intelligence also to be to decide what to do with the human race?
Yeah, I think in the medium run, say 40 or 50 years from now, maybe less, when we have AIs vastly smarter and more powerful than people, humans will have essentially two options, and this is in the optimistic scenario. One is to upgrade themselves and, in essence, fuse their minds with the AI supermind. Two is to live happy, comfortable lives in the people zoo, watched over by the machines of love and grace, as the poem says. And that's pretty much the only outcome I can see possible. And that's sort of how non-human animals are treated on Earth in the more advanced and benevolent parts of the world, right? I mean, they don't have the ability to upgrade and become human, but we have national parks, and we're not going out of our way to squash all the squirrels and sparrows and so forth. I mean, we have the idea that there's a competition for resources, but I think that's a very limited view, and I think that AIs are not necessarily going to have that psychology. We evolved to fight for resources, and that's sort of the nature of evolution by natural selection. But AIs are engineered, and they don't need to be engineered to be competitive and megalomaniacal and so forth. And I personally, in my work with OpenCog and Hanson Robotics, our explicit aim is to create advanced AIs that are compassionate and loving and not selfish and greedy and megalomaniacal. It's not guaranteed that's how it will come out, but that's at least aiming in that direction should increase the odds of it coming out that way.
Could we have, in a few years from now, a theme park where we as humans can go in and have fun, interact with the robots, and just live out our dreams, whether they be good or bad?
I think we will see a lot of intelligent robots in theme parks in the near future. And in fact, Hanson Robotics has recently made a business deal with Disney. So we're likely to see some Hanson robots in Disney theme parks, potentially, and some smaller toy robots made in collaboration with Hanson Robotics and Disney. And as we go forward, that should get more and more interesting. David Hanson and I have long had a dream of making a surrealism theme park, with humanoid robots all throughout, with the most bizarre and surreal characters in human history represented by humanoid robots. We haven't found a funder for that yet, unfortunately. I emailed Vladimir Putin and he didn't want to do it. So,
well, there might be someone in the United States that's crazy enough right now
Perhaps. We've designed a Trumpinator bot, but we haven't built that one either. But I think, you know, right now each new design for a robot takes a while to create. But as we scale up the manufacturing process, it'll become very easy to create new faces and new bodies. And there's no end to what you could do. I mean, you could have a robot clone of each person, and you could have people designing new faces and bodies and 3D print new robots and remote control them. I mean, there's all sorts of cool possibilities that are going to become possible. And yeah, I mean, a theme park could be much more interesting, and a combination virtual reality, augmented reality, and physical environment, and a sort of playground. Because ultimately, one of the fun things about this work is that we're playing with toys, right? I mean, they're complicated toys, and they're toys that may have some important role in the evolution of humanity. So there's a serious aspect, but there's also a very playful aspect. I mean, we have engineers, programmers, mathematicians, visual artists, writers, musicians, all sorts of people around the office, and we're playing with these funky human-looking creatures, and hopefully the playful aspect of what we're doing can get infused into the robots as they get smarter and smarter as well.
So, if anybody wants to follow you on Twitter, what's your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle must be Ben Gertzel, and I'm also on Facebook, Ben Gertzel. So there are not many Ben Gertzels in the world, so I'm easy to find online. So.
And you have an amazing webpage from back in 1995with design that makes like nostalgic feelings pop up. Thank you very much, Ben Gertzel. It was very interesting talking to you.
Thanks for talking to me. The interest in this stuff lately is gratifying to see.
Dette er Radio 24/7.
Nu står jeg her uden for en af hallerne sammen med CEO og co-founder fra Zendesk. Det er nemlig dig, Mikkel Svane. Og Zendesk er jo et meget interessant dansk firma, eller det ligger i USA nu, ikke? Men det ligger også i Danmark. Og vi har ikke haft jer med i Elektronister endnu, og det er jo skandaløst, fordi I er jo virkelig interessant at tale med. Så nu er jeg glad for at have dig.
Der er en grund til, at vi ikke har været med i Elektronister før, fordi vi har jo boet i USA i 7 år nu. Det er 7 år siden, vi forlod Danmark. Zendesk, vi laver primært sådan det, man kalder kundeservice. Og kundeservice-begrebet er begyndt at udvide sig meget her inden for de sidste par år. Så det er sådan lidt mere, hvordan man håndterer hele kundeoplevelsen, hvis du vil, som vi beskæftiger os med. Og det gør vi for en masse kunder. Vi har sted mellem 80.000 og 90.000 forretningskunder, som benytter os til at håndtere kunder og kundehenvendelser og ligesom understøtte kundeoplevelsen. Og det er små virksomheder, det er store virksomheder, det er masse startups i San Francisco, som vi har arbejdet med i mange år, firmaer som you know, Airbnb og Dropbox og Uber og alle de her Pinterest, alle de her banditter. Og så er det en masse små forretninger verden over. Vi har kunder i 150 lande, og danske virksomheder også. Masser af danske virksomheder bruger Zendesk også. TV2 og en lang række, jeg kan ikke engang huske det længere. Men vi har været i USA i 7 år nu. Vi gik på børsen for, det er 2,5 år siden. Vi er en virksomhed med 1.600 ansatte, tror jeg. Og så hovedkvarteret af San Francisco, hvor vi har cirka halvdelen af vores medarbejdere. Og så har vi 12 kontorer verden rundt. Blandt andet i København, hvor vi har et rigtig, rigtig godt team. Et udviklerteam inde i Snaregade. 50 folk sidder der derinde, som vi er meget glade for.
Og Mikkel, hvordan har jeres rejse så været fra da I startede, og I var nogle co-founders, som tænkte, at nu skulle I lave en eller anden form for lidt lækker kundeserviceløsning, som I måske ikke lige selv synes, I havde set før? Og så til der, hvor I er nu, hvor du beskriver altså, de utrolig mange kunder, I har, og der er mange penge involveret også. Hvordan, sådan i korte træk, har den rejse været?
Jamen, den har været helt absurd, men det er jo også, det er jo fantastisk. Det er jo, det er jo nærmest et nyt firma hvert år, ikke? Vi starter helt om forfra med, hvordan vi gør ting og bygger ting og ansætter folk. Og du ved, halvdelen af de folk, der arbejder i firmaet i dag, de har formentlig kun været der i under et år, ikke? Så det er jo, man starter jo forretningen nærmest om hvert år på den måde, ikke? Men det er jo utroligt fascinerende, og vi har jo lært en masse ting, vi ikke anede noget som helst om. At være et startup i Silicon Valley er jo et helt fantastisk oplevelse, ikke? Fordi man er jo ligesom, man er ikke bare en eller anden lille gut, man er jo ligesom en industri, ikke? Og det er en af de næste, altså den formentlig den næst vigtigste industri i Nordkalifornien, ikke? Og så har man jo, og så har vi jo så været hele den her rejse med at gå på børsen, så vi jo ikke havde nogen som helst idé om, hvordan man gjorde, og bygge et team ud og ansætte executives og alle de der ting. Så det har været en helt fantastisk oplevelse, ikke? Og derfor er der også skrevet en bog om det, der hedder Startup Land, som man kan købe på Amazon for $9, tror jeg det er.
Hvordan er kunstig intelligens en del af jeres forretning i Zendesk?
Jamen, det er helt klart noget, vi investerer i, og vi tænker ligesom på den næste generation af at gøre ting smartere, ikke? Altså, det handler om, at på samme måde som ligesom, at det der, at man kunne betjene sig selv, var meget nyt for 10 år siden, ikke? Så ligesom det der med, at man kan blive betjent automatisk, sådan mere nyt i dag, ikke? Så det er helt klart noget, vi investerer i. Og jeg tror udelukkende, det her, det er for det gode. Altså, jeg tror ikke, der er nogen som helst bagside af det her. Altså, jeg sammenligner det stadig lidt med det her med, at man kan ned og købe en flybillet. Jeg kan godt huske, hvordan det var for 20 år siden, ikke? Jeg sad nede på sådan et rejsebureau og sidde med en eller anden, som sad tastet på den her skærm, og det var helt ugennemskueligt, hvad der foregik, og hvor meget det ville koste, og hvornår jeg kunne rejse, og alle den her slags ting. Og nu er jeg fuldstændig empowered til selv at gøre de her ting via en søgemaskine eller på et website, ikke? Og det er da fantastisk. Og det har gjort verden mindre og gjort, at vi alle kan rejse mere. Og jeg tror ikke, der er nogen af de der rejse, hvad hedder det, banditter, som er trætte, som savner at sidde der og taste på den der grønne skærm, vel? Fordi hele industrien er blevet større, og der er mange flere og mange spændende jobs. Og sådan er det også inden for kundeservice. Der er mange i kundeservice, de har nogle forfærdelige job. Forfærdelige job, hvor de skal sidde og høre på folk, der bare er møgsure, fordi at systemerne ikke fungerer, ikke? Og det er ikke nogen, der er tjent med. Det er jo ikke sådan, at du tænker, ej, nu skal jeg ringe til kundeservice, det glæder mig meget til. Vel? Det gør du bare ikke. Det er helt sikkert. Du tænker, at du er allerede lidt gal, når du tager telefonen, ikke? Og sådan er og det skal vi jo væk fra, ikke? Altså, brands og forretninger, de er interesseret i at investere i, at du har en god oplevelse, og at medarbejderne også har en god oplevelse. Og de kan bruge medarbejdernes tid på noget produktivt, og ikke bare sidde og prøve at løse noget skrammel, der ikke virker, eller svare på dine spørgsmål om regningen, eller et eller andet, ikke? Så man kan jo ligesom, man kan reallokere alle de der mennesker til at lave noget, der er meget mere produktivt, og som kan få virksomheden frem i skoene, ikke? Så jeg er overhovedet ikke nervøs over de der ting, og jeg tror bare, man skal give den fuld gas.
Og vi kommer så fra en gammel industri, hvor vi har set, at den personlige kundeservice eller personlige kundeoplevelse er blevet overtaget af teknologien, og på den måde sådan gjort mere general. Og så samtidig så er vi nu i en situation, hvor vi gerne vil have mere personificerede oplevelser ind, men vi har jo sådan den her masse overtagelse, som maskinerne har gjort, men der hvor vi vil gerne vil være, det er, at maskinerne kan betjene rigtig mange mennesker, men meget personligt og individuelt. Hvordan tror du, vi kommer til at se kunstig intelligens sådan i vores helt almindelige liv inden for de næste 5 år? Altså, når jeg som kunde skal ud og købe, eller have kundeservice, eller har kontakt med virksomheder på en eller anden måde, hvordan fylder kunstig intelligens sådan noget i vores liv?
En af de ting, som vi arbejder meget på, det er ligesom at gøre tingene usynlige, ikke? Det vil sige, at det handler ikke om, at, ligesom, at det skal være en knap, man trykker på, og så er der en kunstig intelligens bandit, vel? Altså, det handler lidt om, at når alle dine devices, når alle dine services, når alle de ting, du bruger, når de ligesom er connected, så har virksomheden så mange datapunkter om, hvordan du egentlig bruger deres produkter og services. Så de ved allerede, når du er ved at lave en fejl. Ikke? Når du indstiller termostaten, hver gang du glemmer at slå den fra, når du er ude at rejse, så ved energiselskabet det. Ikke? Hver gang, at du lader vandet løbe, så ved vandselskabet det, alle de der slags ting. Og så i stedet for, at det bliver sådan en grim overraskelse, når du får regning, eller at det bliver en dum interaktion med dem, om hvis fejl det nu er, så de kan være proaktive i deres, hvordan de rækker ud til dig og siger, prøv lige at høre, skal du ikke lige kigge på det her, for det tror jeg er noget, der kan give dig et problem med regningen på et senere tidspunkt. Så jeg tror, vi ser meget mere, at vi ser en verden, hvor brands og forretninger prøver at være ligesom preemptive, jeg ved ikke, hvad man siger på dansk, proaktive, i ligesom, hvordan de håndterer deres kunder og tænker på kundeservice. Og jeg tror, for os som kunder, så bliver det fantastisk. Hvis man bygger nogle systemer for, hvordan man kigger på forskellige typer af interaktioner, det man kalder, for vores udkom, det man for eksempel kalder en customer journey. Hvad sker der egentlig, når kunder gør den her slags ting med os? Hvad interagerer de med på et website? Hvad gør de på... Hvad ringer de til os om? Hvad køber de af os? Hvis du ligesom kan begynde at danne et mønster for, hvordan ting gør, og så samle rigtig mange data for, hvordan rigtig mange kunder gør det, så vil du begynde at se nogle mønstre og nogle afvigelser, og så kan du bruge den information til at sige, jamen her er faktisk en kunde, der begynder på det her, og nu så har du så så kan du se, at det er en mønsterbryder, og det vil så sige, så skal du være speciel over for den kunde, for eksempel. Så det er et godt eksempel på simpelthen at begynde at sammenlignelige data, og så begynde at kunne se ligesom signaler i historien, om du vil.
Mikkel Svane, jeg ved, at du har rigtig travlt. Du er et døgn i Lissabon, og du skal ud og holde en hel masse møder, sikkert med nye partnere til Sendex. Tusind tak, fordi at du var med i Elektronista i dag.
Jamen selv tak.
Dette er Radio 24/7.
Så fordi at jeg i dag til Web Summit holder rigtig meget øje med kunstig intelligens, artificial intelligence, så er jeg også faldet over den her virksomhed, der hedder Recast AI. Faktisk vil jeg sige, det var dem, der faldt over mig. Og sådan er det måske lidt i det her game, at man skal være frisk, man skal bare gå hen til nogen. Vi står med en mikrofon, og så er der to kvinder fra den her virksomhed, der ligesom siger, hvad laver I, hvad er I interesseret i? Og så er det tilfældigvis kunstig intelligens, de arbejder med. Så jeg er rigtig glad for at stå sammen med Justine Baron and Jasmine Antonouis. Is that correctly pronounced?
Yeah.
I know that you are working on this platform that makes it possible for developers to make chat bots. So Jasmine, tell a little bit about that, how that works.
Yeah, basically we are developing a technology to understand when humans speak. And today we are like, it's a little revolution in the tech world, it's chatbots. And our technology allowed developers to easily take some bricks and build their chatbots, okay? How it works.
Maybe we should define what a chatbot is for our listeners. Yeah. Because a chatbot is something that everybody is going to really see and experience in the coming years. And it could be, I guess, both written and voice, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, but we speak about chatbots today because there is like just a simple program that automatizes some daily tasks, okay? But they are available on application, messaging application like Messenger or Slack or Kick or everything we use every day, okay? And these bots will really adapt and be in our daily life. And this is really the revolution, and it will be available anytime, anywhere, because it's in your pocket, it's on your messenger.
So for anyone that listens to this program, they will actually have a life where they will be talking to robots.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about when we are talking about bots.
Yeah.
Basically, it's a software that you will be chatting to, and it will be speaking in a language, obviously, that you understand. So chatting to it will be similar to chatting to your friends or to like a customer service agent.
I personally built a bot for my own family to manage our vacation planning together. My brother wants to do this, my sister wants to do that, we have to share a family home, we have a chatbot on Slack to manage this. You can have a chatbot that understands what's in your fridge and suggests recipes based on it. You can connect that to your smart fridge. In 10 years, that will be just the basis of how we live. You can create bots that manage your bank account. You can create bots that can analyze the market trends in the financial world and advise you on your investments. Anywhere you can automatize things that humans don't add that much value to and that can be done by a robot, you can have a chatbot for it.
So now that we know what a chatbot does, so tell us about that platform that you work with, because now we need people to actually develop these chatbots and make these programs that will be useful for all of us. But how can you make that easy for a developer then?
Yeah. Well, behind all of these artificial intelligence big words, they are really a big algorithm and complex algorithm. And we, when we started our startup, we were thinking it's important that developers don't have to be like big genius and experts in artificial intelligence to build chatbots. So we have like a really intuitive interface to let them use our technology. And a great and important thing is like we are a collaborative platform. That means that if you have built a great chatbot about, I don't know, food, and I want to build the same, I can reuse bricks you already developed. And I don't have to retrain and redevelop what you have already built.
3 weeks ago, we launched a new tool that we called Bot Builder. And it is a way to visualize your entire conversation flow with blocks and links, and you can program your answers there. So absolutely, even if we still remain a platform for developers, what we want is to give developers the chance to innovate, create, test, and to fail, and then to start again to develop this technology that chatbots are, because they are still brand new and need to be researched. And this tool, this Bot Builder tool combined with our technology, is a good way to simplify everything that can be simplified so they can focus on what's important and innovate.
I want to thank you both very much, and thanks to your company, Recast AI. It's a company that anyone could look up, and if you're a developer, maybe it could help you create chatbots. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Dette er Radio 24/7.
På bordet her foran mig, der ligger der nogle bogstaver, og der ligger nogle tal, og der ligger nogle pile, og det er alt i meget fine farver, og der er sådan en lille sød figur, som ligner en hvid lille skraldespand på hjul, og det ser meget venligt ud, det hele, den har også ansigt, og det her, det er produkter, der er til børn. Rasmus Lindholm og Daniel Friis Lindegård er fra det, der hedder Kubo Robot.
Det vi arbejder med, det er at prøve at give børn en grundforståelse for teknologi og kodning. Og det gør vi, fordi at vi i fremtiden kommer til at se både kunstig intelligens og automation gennem robotter overtage jobs. Og det betyder, at vi skal være meget omstillingsparate, og vi skal også have en grundforståelse for de her teknologier, vi så arbejder med. Og udfordringen er i dag med de teknologier, man bruger til at lære børn om programmering, at de simpelthen er for komplekse. Og derfor bliver vi nødt til at gøre det mere simpelt, og det har vi gjort ved at gøre det fysisk, så de faktisk kan sidde med det på et bord og arbejde med det.
Og hvis jeg så forestiller mig, at jeg sad her med min 8-årige datter, jeg tror, hun kunne være lige i målgruppen. Vi er gået i gang med at lege lidt med nogle forskellige programmer. Scratch er jo et program, som man kan lege med blandt andet, hvis man har børn, der skal prøve at finde ud af, hvordan det her programmering det egentlig foregår. Det er sådan en sjov leg. Hvis jeg nu sad her med min 8-årige datter, hvordan ville vi gå til det her så?
Jamen, robotten den består af en krop og et hoved, og man sætter sådan set bare hovedet op på kroppen, og så er robotten tændt. Så kan man sætte den på en af de her brikker, som du kan se hernede, og så er man sådan set i gang med allerede at lave nogle små programmer. Hvis du prøver at sætte den op på den brik der, så vil robotten begynde at køre og indlæse et program, hvor den så indlæser en sekvens af pile, hvor du rent faktisk laver et lille program til robotten, som den så kan udføre senere. På den måde så har du lavet et lille program til robotten på en meget simpel måde, uden at bruge noget tekstbaseret kodning eller noget billedbaseret kodning på en iPad eller en computer.
Er det en skraldespand, det her?
Det er det ikke. Det er meningen, det skal være en sød, lille og appellerende robot. Det er jo klart, det her er en prototype, så derfor er det jo klart, at der måske er nogle detaljer, som ikke sidder helt i skabet endnu. Men så længe du synes, den er sød i hvert fald, så synes vi er godt med indtil videre.
Men Rasmus, hvorfor er det vigtigt for børn overhovedet at lære at programmere? Er det ikke sådan noget, der bare er, kan man sige, et nichesprog til nogen, der skal ud i nogle specifikke jobs, eller altså, er det relevant på helt klasseniveau?
Ja, men vi mener heller ikke, at alle børn skal være programmører nødvendigvis. Det vi prøver er at give børn en grundforståelse for nogle af de tankegange, der ligger bag ved programmering, som man også kan bruge i alle mulige andre fag.
Når man arbejder med programmering, så drejer det sig også meget om, hvad skal man sige, systematisk tænkning, kritisk tænkning, kreativitet og logisk tænkning overordnet set. Og det er redskaber, man kan bruge gennem hele livet. Jeg har lært selv programmering meget tidligt som barn, omkring 13 år. Og det er noget, jeg har brugt gennem hele min uddannelse i mange forskellige fag i virkeligheden. Så det er meget gavnligt, og det vil vi meget gerne brede ud til alle børn.
Og der er jo noget, der tyder på, at det her Kubo-robotprojekt, som I står bag, vækker lidt opsigt. I har fået nogle investorpenge, men I har også været en del af et pitch-program her på Web Summit. Hvordan er det gået?
Jamen, En af grundlæggerne af firmaet, Tommy Ottsen, han har pitchet i løbet af 3 runder, hvor han er gået videre, og har lige her pitchet i finalen for en time siden, hvor han er en af de 3 bedste ud af et start på 1000, der har 1000 pitch, der er blevet sendt ind. Vi venter på at få svar på, hvordan det er gået helt præcis, men vi er meget spændte og glade for den omtale, vi har fået. Det har været enormt positivt at være hernede. Der er rigtig mange, der anerkender vores produkt, så det er super godt.
Og der er jo ingen tvivl om, at selve det der med at pitche, det er en hel disciplin, hvis man er startup. Man kan jo også se det, når man går rundt her. Går man hen til nogen og spørger, hvad er det egentlig, I laver? Så det er jo fuldstændig afgørende for, om man får, ens opmærksomhed bliver fanget, at de kan finde ud af at fortælle, hvad produktet egentlig laver. Hvad er væsentligt her? Hvad for en forskel gør det for den målgruppe, man skal sælge og lave det til? Hvad synes I, der har fungeret godt i jeres pitch, der har bragt jer så langt?
Men jeg tror først og fremmest, så er der mange, der kan genkende den problemstilling, som vi fortæller om med, hvordan verden er i forandring på nuværende tidspunkt. Og samtidig kan de også godt se, hvordan der er behov for værktøjer, der starter endnu tidligere, hvis vi skal alle med. Så det har fungeret rigtig godt. Men derudover vil jeg også sige, i forhold til det her med at lære at pitche, så er det jo afgørende, at man kommer ud og snakker med nogle folk og får noget feedback og ligesom forfiner på den måde. Der er kun én måde at lære det på, og det er simpelthen bare at komme ud. Og det er jo så det, vi gør, blandt andet gennem sådan en konference som den her.
Hvornår kan man få adgang til det her Kubo-robotsystem til skolerne?
Vi er faktisk i gang med lige nu at skaffe skoler, som er interesseret i at indgå i det, vi kalder for et pilotprojekt, hvor man køber sig ind ved at købe 10 robotter. Og så har vi forskellige webinarer og samarbejde omkring at forbedre de her teknologier, så det passer bedst muligt i skolerne. Derudover så har vi i januar en crowdfunding-kampagne, hvor vi prøver at samle penge ind til at komme ud mere internationalt, og det er så mere rettet mod forældre. Så på den måde kan man også som forældre købe sig en robot til sit barn her fra januar af.
Det var nogle skønne, helt konkrete eksempler på, hvordan man kan engagere sig i det her, hvis man synes, det er interessant. Vi lægger selvfølgelig lige et link i vores show notes, så folk kan hoppe ind og kigge, se lidt mere om Kubo-robotten her, hvordan man kan støtte op omkring det. Tusind tak til dig, Rasmus Lindholm, og dig, Daniel Friis Lindegård. Ha' en fortsat god websommer.
Tak.
Du har lyttet til Elektronister her på Radio 24/7. Jeg hedder Christiane Vejlø, og jeg har jo været i Portugal i Lissabon til Web Summit-konferencen, og i det her program, der har jeg koncentreret mig meget om kunstig intelligens. Fik du ikke det hele med, så kan du selvfølgelig gå ind og lytte til programmet i din yndlingspodcast-app eller på Radio 24/7's hjemmeside. Og hæng på næste uge, fordi der kommer der endnu mere her fra Web Summit, der jeg er gået lidt bredere ud og har kigget på mangfoldigheden af tech-nyheder og tech-mennesker, der stiller op til den her konference. Jeg kigger både på hvad der er blevet talt om på de store scener, og så har jeg også været ude og snuse lidt til startup-miljøet. Hvis der er noget af det, du hører, som du synes er ekstra spændende, så er der en god sandsynlighed for, at du kan finde et link til det, eller blive klogere og måske se nogle billeder fra stemningen i de show notes, som vi hver uge lægger op på vores sociale medier. Fang os Radio 24/7 Elektronister på Facebook, eller fang mig på Twitter, hvor jeg hedder Christiane Vejlo. Programmet her, det var produceret af Ninette Birk.
Tillykke.
Vi kommer forbi bagefter.
Det er sgu da mega sej, mand.
Jo, tak. Ja.
Tusind tak.
I har lige, nej, ikke I to, Rasmus og Daniel, men Tommy har lige været på scenen og har simpelthen fået resultatet, at det var jer, der vandt det her pitch.
Ja, altså vi stod jo der faktisk inde i salen sammen med alle andre, der bare så på og ventede på at få at vide, hvad der ville ske. Vi vidste ingenting, da vi fik det annonceret, og Rasmus og jeg havde jo kun hinanden at juble med, og det var heldigvis en helt fantastisk oplevelse. Vi stod og hoppede og sprang og løb direkte herover for at mødes med Tommy, fordi det er det største, vi har oplevet indtil videre i vores liv. Det er en enorm anerkendelse at ligge nummer 1 blandt startups til sådan noget som Web Summit, som jo er en international konference. Så for os betyder det jo også, at vi er udad til, når vi skal ud og snakke med lande og salgspartner og så videre, at vi allerede har en grad af validering i vores produkt, fordi at vi har vundet den her konkurrence her. Så det betyder utrolig meget. Så er der jo den her pris, som vi endnu ikke ved sådan vanvittigt meget om i virkeligheden. Og vi er allerede blevet spurgt af andre journalister, jamen hvad skal I bruge den på? Og vi har først lige fået at vide, at den overhovedet eksisterer, så vi ved ikke rigtig, hvad det vil betyde for vores fremtid, andet end at den ser meget lysere ud. Jo.
Og hvad er det for præcis, I har vundet her? Hvad er præmien i det her?
Jamen som sagt, så ved vi det ikke helt. Vi har hørt, at det er en antagelig pengesum, vi har fået, der helt sikkert, hvis det er tilfældet, så vil det helt sikkert hjælpe os. Men vi ved det som sagt ikke helt præcist.
I hvert fald så skal der altså bare lyde et kæmpestort tillykke herfra. Det er jo altid dejligt at se det danske tech-branche klare sig godt også i udlandet. Og jeg er sikker på, at I kan komme rigtig langt med det her. Tillykke.
Tusind tak.